Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM. We're going to be talking about a couple of big trades that happened in the NFL. And as always, I'm joined by co-host Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
Life is good, Ken. Life is good. NFL is, slowly approaching. Looking forward to minicamp.
We seem to have hit on a new kind of a trade hotspot, and that is June 1st, and a couple of players traded with a post-June 1 designation. One of them had a bonus deferred so that he could make it possible for his team to even release him. I don't think they could have otherwise, or at least it would have been very difficult. But Myles Garrett, the big news this week, the Browns trade him to the Rams. The Rams immediately become the Super Bowl favorites. Rams give up a lot to get him, a 2027 first, a 2028 second, a 2029 third. And Jared Verse, who's had two very good years to start his career and is just entering his third. So he's cheap for a couple more, actually for two more. And then he's got a fifth-year option as well. Maybe a savvy trade by the Browns. How do you feel about it?
Well, first of all, I think by some books had the Rams as Super Bowl favorites even before this trade. As we recall, they were almost in the Super Bowl. They beat the Seahawks in regular season, then lost in the conference championship. I kind of think this is a win-win for both sides. I think it's a pretty good trade for the Browns, considering they get Verse back so that they have more of a proven commodity than just the pick, because not every first-round pick hits. And for the Rams, I think it could be a win trade, depending on how many more years Garrett has left. You know, he could play for another 5-8 years, potentially, the way he keeps his body in shape. He is one of the few players in the whole league what I would advocate trading a set two first-round picks for.
It's interesting because, you know, what they gave up, honestly, what the Browns received in this case was less draft. Sorry, what they gave up was what they received was less than what the Ravens offered for Max Crosby.
Yeah, I was against the Crosby trade, but Garrett, I think, is a superior player. I mean, he's defensive player of the year. Some think he's the defensive version of Lamar Jackson, the guy that's kind of your MVP. He tilts the field. The key for me always has been, if you're going to give up a lot of capital, that player has to come in and allow you to go cheap somewhere else. And Garrett, I think, will. Although the Rams put a lot of money in their secondary this offseason, and they're still going to return a pretty good set of defensive linemen.
Yeah, not exactly a big draft. Sorry, not exactly the biggest draft capital move that the Rams have ever made. That would have been Stafford, but certainly a very big trade if you include Verse, who is a former first round pick and a top 10 pick anyway.
Yes, I believe they gave up two firsts for Jalen Ramsey as well. But I agree. Obviously, Verse has a lot of value with 2 years team control and one of the ascending younger edge rushers. So it probably strengthens the Browns. It allows both teams to get on their timelines, the preferred timelines, right? The Browns probably weren't going to be contending for anything until Garrett was well past his prime. And the Rams, despite their future pick of Ty Simpson, have been, you know, a very win now focused organization for a long time now.
And it certainly appears that that'll continue. You mentioned, you know, some of the other players that are there for the Rams. Aaron Donald now talking about a potential return. And this is a what I'll call like a Lamar Jackson effect that they're getting from Myles Garrett, that all of a sudden everybody wants to play for you because you've got one particular guy.
Right. You know, I'd like to look back at what the Rams have done a little bit since they've had McVay, because they've proven that draft and develop isn't the only way to do it. They had the F them picks strategy, and they haven't really paid the piper for it. So since 2017 with McVay, they have a .618 win percentage. They made the playoffs 7 out of 9 years, the divisional round 6 out of 9, the conference championship 3 out of 9, made it to 2 Super Bowls and 1-1. Now, the Ravens have had a better win percentage at .638, so but they've made the playoffs 1 year less, on the division round only 3 times, and only 1 conference championship, 0 Super Bowls. I know there was a lot of dispute when they started becoming so aggressive that it was going to blow up in their face, but I think they've proven that throughout the 2010s, I think it was commonly thought by pretty much everybody that draft and develop was definitely the way to go. And I think they've shown that it's not necessarily the only way.
It's not the first time this has ever occurred. I mean, the 1970s George Allen Redskins were built in a similar manner where they traded their first round pick every year and they got away with it for an extended period of time, largely on the back of a great defense that had a variety of pieces kind of thrown together on offense. I'm not saying it can't ever work, but it wouldn't be what I'd want. I think the teams that have done it have largely not been particularly successful at it. The teams that have gone out and traded a lot of draft capital to get players, I don't think the exception proves some other new rule. I think it is. Rams have certainly been extremely successful with this technique, but I don't think the exception proves the rule.
I think you could probably say Kansas City has dabbled in that a little bit by trading first-round picks for players, particularly that Frank Clark they gave up two first. But they've also traded players away. The team we're going to talk about next has certainly traded early-round picks away, and now they've traded players to get some of them back. I think the key is you got to have superior X's and O's coaching, and you got to hit in the later rounds. That's something that's overlooked. The Rams have done one of the best drafting teams in the middle and late rounds, finding starters at linebacker, cornerback, safety, even offensive lineman on day three.
Yeah, generally, you know, a good front office will help you get through a lot of that. And that's why some teams, they can stay successful despite the fact they're drafting very late year after year after year. That's one of the things that they have to do well. Of course, the Ravens, the Steelers, the Packers have all done that very well. You know, it's an interesting trade from a couple different reasons. First of all, I think it may kind of redefine the rules of how players look at playing out the string with an old team. Now, Garrett had a $30 million roster bonus that he was willing to defer. And I think it was in the interest of himself to get out of Cleveland and in the interest of the Browns as well, that he agreed to have that deferred until after June 1st, which what that allowed to happen was for the Rams to pick up that bonus and pay it, as opposed to the Browns picking it up, which would have just meant more dead money by another $30 million. And they'd have had $77 million of dead money over 2 years instead of only $47. So it did make a big difference. And that was how this trade got made. When I saw it happen originally, I was saying, how the hell did that happen? They didn't have the cap room to do that. And then, you know, it turns out that Garrett and the Browns had quietly agreed to this deal in the past.
Yeah, you made a great point. You know, June 1st is becoming a key date. I could see this becoming every year. There's trades. And we had this conversation when the A.J. Brown trade first came up, and we said, well, they can't do it. They can't afford to do it unless they wait till June. But it does seem that the NFL is becoming a little bit more like the NBA, where a star player on a losing team can sort of force his way out. And I also think, not to move on too fast, but the Eagles trade definitely had some components of an NBA style trade to it as well.
Yeah, the Eagles trade very similar in terms of a lot of dead money being picked up by Philadelphia over 2 years. And Philadelphia, a team that's really picked up tons of void year money that they had on the books, and they'll eat a significant amount. The A.J. Brown trade, Philly receives a 2028 number one and a 2027 number five. Interesting they did it that way. I think there's some logic to Philadelphia trying to defer the number one in hopes that it will be a higher value pick from New England. And I don't know that they're right about it, but they probably got a better chance at the 2028 number one being a higher value pick than the 2027 number one.
Well, Patriots are going from the easiest schedule in the league last year to a first place schedule now. So I'm not sure. And obviously they have some turmoil with the whole Mike Vrabel situation. I heard Howie just said, we just needed a first, didn't matter what year, which also kind of rung a bell to the NBA because they're trading future firsts all the time. You know, some team has somebody else's 2032 first round pick and they're protected as long as they're not in the top five and all that sort of thing. So it is interesting, right? Because when you defer a year, it usually moves you up around. So that's, he got a first, but 2 years down the road is sort of like getting a second.
here's why it's not like getting a second, because the first round has completely different peaking of the value within the round. If it was a third round pick and a fourth round pick, sure, 1 year deferred. I understand the logic of it being, you know, a little bit high. In the first round, you can get, you know, three times the value potentially of that pick. And you know, it's just, there's more of a peaking impact of it that I think you know, Philadelphia is looking to cash in on. It might work out, it might not for them. But if the Patriots find themselves in another valley where they've got to make some changes and they all of a sudden don't have a great year in 28, then they in 27, then the Eagles could be the beneficiaries.
Yeah. So the way the Eagles are managing the void years is boggles the mind in some ways. They have seemingly I don't understand how they're able to push it out. I thought Brian said it's a maximum of 5 years, and they're able to somehow push them out longer than that, some of them.
I don't know what they're doing either from an accounting basis to do this. I hope the NFL is keeping very close track of it, and I hope what the other teams are aware of it and are deciding not to do it. The Browns are an exception. As opposed to they think there's something wrong with what the Eagles are doing, and they don't want they're objecting quietly to the league about it, and they're not doing anything.
Yeah, I mean, the cap's going to continue to grow. We expect it to grow at that steady pace that it's been going at ever since the COVID, you know, paybacks. Mm-hmm. But that's not going to bail the Eagles out completely, or any team with a lot of void years, because
better not.
Even though you might be cap compliant, you're not going to have the same resources that the other teams are going to have.
It better not with a new CBA. Is my fear is that they would change the CBA and there'd be some forgiveness of cap. That better not happen. Cleveland or Philadelphia. And anyway,
that would infuriate me as well. It definitely shouldn't be that way.
Brown coming off not a great year. 8.3 yards per target in his age 28 season. He's still at 9.8 yards per target career. But, frankly, New England's kind of buying low. They may be having a chance to get a player here like Brown at a good price. And on the other hand, Philadelphia may be getting rid of him at just the right time, you know, that he's in decline.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of wear and tear, and he's had some injuries. I think some of his regression is due to Jalen Hurts' regression, and apparently they just didn't get along, and they would call the play, and A.J. Brown would be the first read, and Hurts would change the call at the line because I guess he didn't want to feed Brown. So a lot of factors go into this trade. I think it helps New England, but I don't think he's a massive upgrade over what Diggs did for him last year. So I'm not, I think Buffalo should probably still be considered the favorite in the East coming up.
All right. Well, fair enough. It certainly is another player to the AFC East, and that's good to see a couple of teams competing for that division. The walkover years that are possible, that's one of the things that's made some of the super teams of the first 25 years of this century. It's not good for football to have the Patriots constantly dominating the AFC East, or the Bills, which it was obviously for a while after the fall of the Patriots. And in the same way, the Indianapolis Colts dominated for many years in the South. I mean, or Kansas City in the West. The only division that's been consistently competitive has been the North. And it's been very frustrating.
And the NFC West. The NFC West has been pretty strong.
I'm talking about the AFC.
Yeah,
AFC.
No, I agree. The South is – the AFC South's got to be the worst division in the sport over the last 20 years, I would say, by a pretty wide margin. They've had several years where teams are losing records, win the division, and get a home playoff game.
Yeah, the NFC South has also been very bad, but I would agree. The AFC South has been pretty darn awful. All right. In addition, so the A.J. Brown thing, let's talk about each of these players for a second. When you see Myles Garrett going for this kind of price, do you have any kind of level of remorse that the Ravens wouldn't have put a bid in for that type? And let's say that instead of Jared Verse, you're talking about giving up Mike Green, because I think he'd be the one-for-one player that is clearly not as good right now as Verse, but has an extra year of sand in the hourglass, and then you give up those same picks. Would you have been excited about that?
I think for Garrett, I would have done it for Garrett. I think so. Just because
you're talking about now from just a player perspective, not a contract perspective at this point, right?
Correct. Okay. So for the assets you're giving up versus getting Garrett back, because he's just, you know, he's coming off setting the record, and he's just been so consistent over the years, just being tremendous. We actually have a question directly related to that, if you want me to weave it in here, Ken. Bro, this is from Drew Williams, and he says, I think the Rams deal for Garrett is better than what EDC gave for Max. Salary cap aside, would you have given up Roquan and the same picks for Garrett? Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, Roquan, it's like you're solving a cap situation. So I'm not sure that that's too much of a difficult question of any sort. The problem is Garrett's salary and Lamar's salary. That's the problem. And, you know, I'm not really liking the idea of trying to construct a team that has Babe Ruth, Cy Young, and 20 other guys. That's what I'm not real crazy about creating. Because, you know, those guys get hurt, either one, and you're in trouble. Already the Ravens, you know, have something like that with Hamilton and Lamar. But Miles Garrett, great player. There's no doubt about it. I was opposed to the Crosby trade. I'm glad it got rescinded. I'm okay giving up draft capital. I'm okay giving up money, but I really hate giving up both.
Yep. I agree. He's just such a transformative player. If he wasn't a top five player in the league, I always agree with that. Gave up one pick or one contract, not both.
Yeah. All right. And A.J. Brown, a guy who was talked about for a long time in here, is a guy who might be coming to the Ravens. Price tag, for my money, way too steep on him. And you could point to factors that made him not as good in his bad Philadelphia situation, but I'm not picking up a guy that age who's just had his career low in yards per target and paying that kind of a price tag. If you're 25, different matter.
I agree. And when the Eagles traded for him, I would have been in favor of making that trade when the Eagles received him at his age. And also considering the state of the Ravens wide receiver room at that point. But now that you have five young guys with some potential and Brown is now aging, I wouldn't have been excited about that trade at this point.
Yeah, A.J. Brown would be the oldest guy in the room, I believe. I believe Bateman is not yet. Well, he's not 29, but I would love to have. I'd love to give a test drive this free agent room without any distractions from another vet receiver.
My receiver, right.
I agree with you. Not sure what I said there. Yeah,
I agree with you. I don't think you need to make it. I've said the same thing every time. Center would be a place to add. And potentially tight end and potentially outside linebacker 5. Other than that, I think you're ready to roll.
Okay. All right. Now we had another big signing occur in the NFL, Christian Watson to the Packers. There is a guy who's been unbelievable on a rate statistic basis. He's at 11.7 and 11.1 yards per target the last 2 years. Mix of quarterbacks involved in that, but it's only on 53 and 55 targets respectively. But he's at 10 yards per target for his career. Very, very few receivers can ever do that. But you look at him, and his last two seasons have been better than, say, Zay's last season all by itself. There is a real question as to whether Watson is a player who could deliver those kind of results with a higher workload.
Yeah, he's been in a 4 and sometimes even 5 receiver rotation. Also notably, he's missed 26 games since he's been drafted due to injury. That's almost 40% of all games over the last 4 years, 38%. Mm-hmm. I prefer Zay to Watson. I think Watson has a lot of ability, but he's more one-dimensional. He's just a field stretcher and maybe a runner to the catch guy, but not a guy that's going to move the chains for you.
North Dakota State guy, but these last 2 years have been something very, very special in terms of yards per target for him at 11.4 over the last two combined. How about the impact this might have on Zay's contract?
So Watson signed for 110 and a half over 4. So that's 27, almost 28.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't think it has much impact because I think they're vastly different players. And I think the durability that Zay has shown props him up. The contract I do think impacts Zay's, which just got inked, I believe, in the last week, is Drake London, who's Atlanta's.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com.
For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
First round pick. Now he signed 4 years, 141. So that's 35 a year. Okay. And that's what I think a lot of people are looking at. So just to stack it up. So the cap has risen, but not all positions have risen correspondingly. The three positions that really have that have multiple players over 30 million are quarterback, obviously, edge rusher, and wide receiver, which are the three positions that a lot of people consider the most impactful, the most valuable, with left tackle up there somewhere, but it hasn't risen that much. So top of the market is JSN at 42. Ja'Marr Chase is at 40. Justin Jefferson's at 35, CeeDee Lamb's at 34, Metcalf 33, Garrett Wilson 32.5, and AJ Brown at $32 million a year.
But then you just said Drake London is at 35, right? A four-year deal for 141?
Yeah, it hasn't been imported into OTC yet because it's so fresh. Right. But yeah, he slots in there. So I think Zay's probably going to be over 30, if not close to 35.
I mean, I'm looking at Drake London's stats. He's not nearly the player Zay Flowers is.
More touchdowns, though.
22 career touchdowns. It's not a huge number in four seasons. And he's got 8.0 yards per target. And Zay certainly benefits from playing with Lamar, and he's put together three straight 1,000 yard seasons. I am concerned about where this puts Zay now. So,
I think worst come to worst, you make Jay a very fine offer. You can always tag him too. I know you can't push the money out in the future, but that's just borrowing money from the future. If you have this cap space to tag him, because if you're going to pay him more per year than the franchise tag costs you, it's not that bad of a deal.
Right. I mean, they've got to get Lamar Jackson signed. Let's put it that way. They have to get that done. It has to be the first step if they're gonna give Zay this money. And Lamar probably wants them to sign Zay to make sure that he's got his one of his favorites there. They're a great combination. There's a number that I'd be not willing to go above for Zay. And
I agree.
I think you gotta figure on trading him or figuring out how you get the most possible value from him. But I don't know what that number is yet. And maybe it needs to be readjusted. Maybe it really is 37, 38 million is what they got to think about paying and not 32 million.
But Smith and Jigba at 42 is too rich for my blood.
Yeah, certainly as of right now, I agree with that. Contracts may change by the time Zay's ready to sign, though. It could be next offseason. And if we've had four more contracts signed at 37 million and up, say, kind of thing, then it's going to look awfully difficult to get it done cheaper.
Yeah, but the price of wide receivers, as I mentioned, is going up along with edge and quarterback. Those three are growing faster than the rest of the positions.
All right. Well, definitely need to figure out a way. The Ravens need to figure out a way to develop wide receivers, and this will be a big test in 2026 to make sure that these three young guys don't get ignored in the system.
Yeah, that's another great reason why don't get a vet, because you need to develop these guys this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe we talk a little bit about rookie camp, then we get into a couple more questions. If we have, I think we have one more at least in the bag right now.
Yep.
So a couple things have come up at camp, and some of them affect the Ravens roster in a certain way. So the pass rush and the secondary do seem to be working to get well together. They had a really good day. There was no Tyler Huntley around, so it was Lamar, and he generally avoided big mistakes, though he didn't, I wouldn't say he had a terrific day or anything. But the other quarterbacks were getting picked off and tipped, and there was a ton of great pass rush on the from the defense thing, which I really was happy to see.
It's really enjoying the reports from Camp Kevin for sure. Keep us tuned to what matters and what's going on. There's little quick hitters and the podcast long form too. It's much appreciated.
I appreciate that. Thanks for saying so. The other guy who may really have an impact on the roster now, and his play is Keandre Jackson. It was by far the standout player, and it was kind of a cool day because at the podium, Anthony Levine was the first guy up there. And you think about what player would Anthony Levine say he's most similar to on the Baltimore Ravens? I think he'd probably say Keandre Jackson, a backup safety, maybe hoping to develop a defensive role this year. And trying to split his time between these two things and be an NFL survivor at the minimum. He debunked that pretty quickly and said he's a lot more physical player, he's a better athlete. And he didn't say exactly that, but he said he hoped for much more out of Keandre than what he did in his career.
Yeah, great to see Keandre making plays on the back end. That's something we wondered about and projected, but didn't necessarily see it. There's a lot of cornerbacks on this roster now that you want to save a spot for, or at least give an opportunity. So if you can go with four safeties and Keandre can both fill a backup role as split field plus special teams, then guys like Keon Martin or Longer Beam have a better shot to stick, because you can only keep so many defensive backs at the end of the day.
Yeah, and that's exactly the point, is that I think the big loser out of Keandre Jackson's big day was actually Kayvon Wallace, who probably ends up on the practice squad for the Ravens, taking one of those vet spots. Not a terrible place. So the Ravens, by the way, I don't think there's a long line of other teams at the cutdown day that will be looking to claim Kayvon Wallace from the Ravens. But I think there will be teams that, as their roster's a trit, will try and sign him away off the Ravens practice squad. So there's some risk there. But he's a guy who is a backup split field guy. If Keandre Jackson is the backup split field guy, it's exactly who he was brought in to kind of like light a fire under, it seemed. And now, with a big day from Keandre, this could mean seven cornerbacks on the roster. And if it did, that would create real space. And it's the Ravens have such a need to figure out who they have, very much like the receiver room. They've got three receivers they want to look at. Well, they've got like five young corners that they want to look at between, Tampa. They certainly want to get some playing time. He's the fourth corner this year, as well as, Martin and Longerbeam and Kone and Rivers and I'm forgetting one here.
Robinson.
Yeah.
Yep.
So,
yeah, it's a group, but, you're probably going to be replacing two of the top three guys this time next year with Awuzie and
Humphrey.
Humphrey, we did that last week, our percentage chance, and we weren't super high. I don't think we were above 25-30% on either of them.
Yeah, so I think there is a good chance both of them are gone. And certainly if Humphrey doesn't have a good year, he's at least changing positions. And I do kind of hope he does it. If he makes a position change, he does it with the Ravens. I think it's nice to have that continuity, but I don't want to pay big money for it. This would be a fresh start for probably not a long-term deal. It'd probably be a one-year deal where he tries to play safety. If it works out, you can talk about bigger money in a second year.
Yeah. He's done well. I would like Humphrey to be a Raven for life if possible. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites over the years. Second best cornerback in team history, in my opinion.
After McAllister, you're saying then?
Yep. Second best.
Yeah. Been a good group. The guy, my guy from the Ravens past that I think does not get enough love is Dwayne Starks. Okay. He was a hell of a ball hawk and really came into the league immediately as a great ball hawk. He had 20 or 21 picks in his 4 years as a Raven, and they were in that rebuilding phase after the 2001 season. They had to let him go, and they let him walk, and it was the smart move. He ended up never being the same player again.
Yes. Yeah, great player. Webb, Jimmy Smith, those are the homegrown guys. Samari Roll gave him some good years as a veteran.
Yeah.
It's been one of the better position groups on the team.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's get to the mailbag.
Did you want to touch on center competition?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I did want to. So center has been basically a three-man race in camp. One of the things I'll say is, and I don't think I'm speaking out of turn to do this, is that Javon Gwynn, that's what they brought him in to here to do. There's no doubt about it now. He's not playing any other positions. He's a center.
And if it could, the guy end up at guard somehow, I guess it's possible. He's a little undersized, honestly. I think he's going to be a center or nothing. And I think he it's now down to him and Pinter are the two guys who are really battling it out. And Corey Bullock, unfortunately, was not there on Tuesday. And I'm not sure what the reasoning was, because he's the only guy of his kind of tenure who wasn't there. So a guy who hasn't really established himself as yet as an NFL player.
That was puzzling. And I would assume it's some sort of personal issue. It came out that Bateman hasn't been there because he had a child.
Right.
Tyler Huntley wasn't there because he had twins. And apparently, I think my daughter told me Lamar and Zay are the godfathers of the kids. So that's kind of cool.
So,
Bullock, I still hoping he can get in the mix. Like we've talked about it many times. I hope they can find a center with some size that can hold up to the bull rush.
Right. It's still one of the hallmarks of the AFC North is the size of the interior defensive linemen. So anyway, it's not always all that much you can see from the OTAs. They're still non-contact practices. They seem to be very focused on cadence again, much like they were with Monken last year, which has been kind of interesting. Minter addressed that at the podium. I would encourage people go out and listen to some of the things. I really kind of hate reporting on what is said, unless I think there's something to read between the lines. Otherwise, I said, just go out and listen to yourself. You're going to determine your own spin on these things. But there have been some interesting things about what's happened both at rookie camp and OTAs now.
I like what Flowers said about Doyle. He seems very excited to play for him.
Yeah.
But called him a genius, right?
Yeah, he wasn't the only one. Weaver called him a genius too. So Weaver talked about him having a photographic memory. I think that's one element that I normally associate with that, but he's fairly remarkable at the podium, extremely impressive in terms of what he is. If you want to go out and look at Friday's answers specifically, just look at the way he seems to process information and talk back. The only coach that I've really seen on the Ravens that I would ascribe that kind of a cerebral nature to in recent years is Jerry Rosberg.
Okay.
And he had a professorial kind of a composure at the podium that kind of a considered himself like a Dick Cavett-esque wit. And he would get real short when he wanted to be witty or flip about something to try and make it known that he was trying to make a joke about it without actually making a joke about it and getting himself in trouble with the league. So there were numerous things like that would occur. And then he'd go out there on the field and he's just screaming in players' faces. It's just a completely different kind of a look for him. So a different view.
With the switch. Yeah.
Yeah. We got some interesting coaching differentials in terms of we spent practice inside 2 weeks ago. And man, Ledford really, really loud when you're indoors. You really hear him screaming.
Sure.
And he's consistently fire hosing these offensive linemen with information on a rep by rep basis. He sets up multiple reps, then he goes down the line, sets off one, sets off two, sets off three. So you can watch each one and talk to the players about it. Very much Joe D like, by the way. They don't run like three reps side by side. They go one, two, three, go, and everybody goes at the same time. He looks at one kind of thing. They run them individually. I was impressed by that. Eddie Faulkner is the other guy, though. Very kind of a quiet coach, more of a just say as much as is really needed. And so he didn't have anything to say to Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry actually kind of laid out a complex path through some pads and cones and whatnot. And Derrick Henry's having trouble like understanding like, okay, where am I supposed to go here and jump cutting and whatnot. And he was going first, of course. And Faulkner, the only guy he had anything to say to, at least that I could hear, was Adam Randall. And he's talking about holding the ball a little tighter or a certain different way to make sure you hold on to it, but very sparse, only the minimum needed. So you force that player to kind of remember what he said.
That's smart too. Kerry Colbert, the wide receivers coach, as we're talking about developing young guys, he's going to be an important coach, and the tight end coach as well. I think it's Rizzi, right?
Grassi.
Yeah. So he's, you're developing young guys. You're going to need these receivers to be ready to play this year. So a lot of new faces, but I'm very encouraged by what I've seen and heard so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. You see, there's definitely a lot of rapport, much more rapport between the players and the coaches, and a lot of it's just age differential. But I go back to the weirdest pair, you know, the Earl Weaver and Jim Palmer pair, and those guys got along well enough to be very successful. But the Earl Weaver and Jim Palmer pair, but the two guys who just aren't similar at all, was Rob Ryan and Patrick Queen. I'm tremendously different age. Patrick Queen's in good shape. Rob Ryan's a big fat tub of goo. And, you know, just to have him like try to teach Patrick Queen how to play linebacker, you just looked at it and you said, this is not going to work.
All right. Shall we hit the mailbag?
Yep.
So this is from Sims Rob LJ of MV3, which I agree with. He tagged us onto a notification that the Seattle Seahawks have signed edge rusher Derek Hall to a 3-year, $42 million upside of $46.5 million contract. And he posed a question, is that too expensive for Tavius?
Yes. my simple answer is yes.
I would agree. And I did a quick comparison. Hall's a much better pass rusher. He had 41 pressures last year. The most Tavius has ever had in a season was 18. He had a 72.6 PFF pass rushing grade. Tavius has been below 55 every year of his career, and he also has a better draft pedigree by two rounds. So I think when you have a big-money quarterback and a big-money pass rusher, or potentially a big-money wide receiver coming up here, players like your edge-setting outside backer is the position where you really want to save.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think that he will command that kind of salary. And the real question is there a mid-range salary that the Ravens can afford to pay? We've already talked on previous shows about, do they really have room for a $5 million veteran cornerback? Mm-hmm. And that might be a position that the Ravens just don't have next year, particularly if they develop a couple of these young guys. And it looks like, you know, they'll ride with what they have, kind of like what they're doing at wide receiver this year. Mm-hmm. That might work out. But I could easily see them not being willing to go beyond a certain point with Tavius. What a great teammate that guy is. I mean, he never misses a practice. He had some sort of long Cal Ripken-esque streak of never having missed a practice in his life until he was hurt last year.
Wow.
And that's really remarkable. But, I mean, he's there all the time. It was never a question of where he wants to be and play football. You love that kind of a teammate. You love that kind of a player. There just is a cap on the value with his current, you know, productivity that I would be willing to pay.
Agreed. Definitely.
Is there any more? Was that the last
one? That was the only one. The other one I weaved into the main.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot.
I don't know if you had any from Reddit, but I didn't see those.
Unfortunately, I did not check, and that's a bad thing for me because the Reddit community has been great, and they have mm-hmm. you know, oftentimes will have something they say. But great always talking football with you, Voss. Get a chance to talk about some things that are going on around the rest of the league as much as with the Ravens here. The Ravens just have one more week of OTAs, a two-day mandatory minicamp next week. So we'll be on next Friday, I assume, and talking a little bit about that along with whatever other news, you know, we'll come up between now and then. But
you have media availability of both days or only one? For minicamp,
I think it's both. Yeah, both are on the schedule.
I think it's both.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah. So yeah, there's only been one day of each of these first mm-hmm. OTA days, and so Ryan Mink is alone reporting, and he's not going to tell you anything bad that happens.
I don't think he's ever seen anything bad happen.
Yeah. Yes. He won't even tell you who an interception was against if it, you know, there's thrown. So anyway.
Right. Yeah. Then it's vacation time for the players they get about 6 weeks or so, and then camp.
We got a little bit of time too off to maybe do a couple things ourselves and get back to it, but there'll be lots of information. The expectation series will be continuing. We've had a lot of fun with that, and I'm down to only one remaining show. If you're out there, if you're a listener and you're out there and you would like to talk about, I'll give you the players involved. I'm gonna take this maybe on a first come first service. John Simpson and Amare Oruwariye. If you'd like to talk about those two, it's all yours. It's absolutely, it is the worst pairing of the entire 33 shows but every other one is taken currently. And I'd love to hear from somebody new, some new listener who hasn't been on yet. Voss, thanks again. Always a pleasure working with you, working folks, talk to you online. Or you want to talk about your new venture or anything yet?
So I'm still under confidentiality. I was hoping to put pen to paper 2 days ago, but by this time next week, I should be able to disclose and start advertising. Anyway, I am on Twitter X at Vasilis Lerikos, VasilisLerikos. And I always enjoy talking ball, enjoying the NBA finals too. You want to talk basketball? I don't like the NBA regular season, but the playoffs I really enjoy.
All right. Other facts out there, please use hashtag film study mailbag for your questions. We'll get them to this show if this is the appropriate place to answer them. Love to hear from you if you have a short idea that you'd like to be on. And of course, if you want to do John Simpson and Amare O, you hit me up with that and we'll talk. For Voss Lerikos, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.